Cartoon Network presents June Bugs, a whole weekend of Bugs Bunny. That means over 50 Bugs Bunny cartoons that we've never shown before. And that means a lot of overtime for that Wescally Wet.
I'll be scared later. Right now, I'm too mad.
June Bugs, with over 50 Bugs Bunny Cartoon Network premieres, starting Friday, June 1st at 11, only on Cartoon Network.
Well, stupid, are you ready?
Okay, Smokey, roll them.
That's silly.
Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hi-ho, everybody, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, folks, a Looney Tunes podcast. I'm your host, Mark Halem, joined by...
And I'm Jordan Schmidt, and we are continuing No, not June Kermit, it's June Bugs.
Yes.
Which we started last week, and we had a good time with the ones that we were dealt in last week's episode. And we've got another nice bunch of Bugs cartoons slated for this episode, ranging from the 40s to the early 50s, and giving such adversaries as Elmer Fudd, Yosemite Sam, and some magician guy that was only used once, except for later by the Sylvester and Tweety Mysteries gang.
Because everyone was used by the Sylvester and Tweety gang.
Everyone.
So, the shorts we're covering this week are Case of the Missing Hare, Rabbit Every Monday, and The Unruly Hare.
Right, and as you remember, Unruly Hare was the one that I thought we were covering in the Fran Tashlin episode when we were actually covering Hair Remover. So we're finally getting to that one.
All right. So, Case of the Missing Hair came out on December 12th, 1942. Regardless of what happened on that day, a war was going on.
There was a war going on.
The Germans began Operation Winter Storm, an attempt to break the Soviet encirclement of the 6th Army at Stalingrad. And the Soviets began a winter offensive codenamed Operation Little Saturn.
Hmm. That's something you wish you could hear in a Russian accent. Yes, Little Saturn is doing great.
Little Saturn got an A in English today.
Is comic book guy Russian?
I was thinking there was either comic book guy or Mr. Burns. Yes. No, of course you see. Operation Little Saturn is... No. The show is written by Chuck Jones, written by Ted Pierce. Some fun facts here. This was Chuck Jones' first cartoon to use, quote, experimental, strongly graphic, nearly abstract, and simplistic backgrounds. Okay, phrasing, guys. It's very graphic. It's just different designs in the background.
I put a lot of genitalia in the back there. Yeah. See if you can spot some.
Yeah.
Remember, we weren't doing these for kids. We were doing these for ourselves. Hey, Chuck, what's with all the dicks?
No. I put two shields in the background for one of the shots. See if you can notice them. This short has
get in there, Mark?
Abstract and simplistic backgrounds because I made a video that no one will ever see. That's why.
That's just the way you make me feel.
It'll destroy our fan base. Yeah, so there's some simplistic backgrounds of flat colors as a stark contrast to the usual realistic backgrounds in the Jones cartoons. This is kind of the first one that took him away from doing like Disney style backgrounds and more like silly stuff because the focus should be on the characters and not the background.
Yeah.
And it's also the first Bugs cartoon to quote the famous Groucho Marx line.
No, not Carl.
Of course you realize this means... No. It's his fun cousin, Groucho. Groucho Marx line. Of course you realize this means war. Is there a Groucho Brothers short where they... I don't like how Charlie Chaplin had to go against Hitler because of their similar appearance. Just the Marx Brothers take on communism. Get the take on Carl.
Probably.
Yes, we are. Adorable, eh? I haven't seen since the family reunion. Yes, I have expanded my horizons.
Wait, is Mr. Burns in this one as well?
Yes, I guess so. Why not? Also, fun fact, this is one of the few cartoons where Bugs doesn't say, "What's up, Doc?" He says, "Pardon me, Doc." He's a kinder rabbit in this
one. Kinder, gentler rabbit, yes.
Exactly. And, as you said, Alabama, which sounds like a suicide bomber.
No, Mark. It sounds like the state we were having so much fun with recently.
It was.
The state that, like, you know, has a very tough rule about who can be allowed into their band.
Alabama would later appear in the Special Tweety episode, The Cat Who Knew Too Much, as a chef. And would make a cameo in Space Jam, because everybody... Yeah.
Alabama would also write the song Mountain Music, and...
Yes.
How is this our running game?
No idea.
This Janelle's tits? What the hell is going on here? Can you believe this? No, I can't.
For anyone who eventually sees the video feed, this goes live, no. We're... Okay. It's just like, oh, they're going crazy. Apparently you think Kermit the Frog's in the room. Okay.
What's with that big old rabbit over there?
The episode just over the course of the episode, it just becomes a Muppet podcast. And the third show we're covering is The Muppet Show, episode 3, season 3, episode 16.
Wait a minute.
Alright. So... Our short begins with a panning shot of Alabama's magician's act. He's in some hotel, and he's getting the word out. He's putting flyers everywhere, including a tree, which just so happens to be where Bugs Bunny lives.
Yeah, it lives in a tree, not the rabbit in this one.
Rabbits lives in trees in this one, don't question it. As, Bugs pops out and goes, pardon me, Doc, I do get some more carrots. There's a nice long shot of the magician looking over, and Bugs just picks up some carrots, walks on back into the tree, and goes, okay, bye.
Okay.
Though I did love, as Bugs comes back, just says, oh, low bridge, as he puts up the guy's arm into the tree. Loving that. As the magician just... mad that Bugs ripped through his beautiful poster, so he hammers it in again, leading to an angry Bugs, which we got a lot in this early era of just...
Look, Doc, do I go around nailing signs over your house? Do I? There's still such a thing as private property, you know? Give me here at the inalienable right of the sanctity of the home?
To me, it's a very basic Bugs versus Bully kind of opening, because it has to set up,
it is,
you know, the eventual parade of gags that we're going to get. I mean, you know, some of this is a bit too talky for me, and some of this is very clearly trying to set up the dominoes. But, you know, there is some fun in just this era of Bugs and how loose he is.
So, eventually the magician just... pies Bugs with a raspberry pie with a very like weird like gag, just because he has like a real like thick accent. He's like, hey, would you like a mission spy? And then Bugs going, sure, whatever, I guess. I don't know, it's a pie gag leading to Bugs to say, of course, really, this means war, which I'm sure will never come up again in any short ever.
No, I'm sure he makes the turns at Albuquerque as well.
So we just cut it over to the magician's act. As we get this nice gag, he just throws his cape. The cape is on the stage. It's alive, then just sneaks off.
He just sadly runs off stage.
Inanimate objects being sneaky is never not funny.
Yeah, that's
it. Worked
scary.
Then. It works in Aladdin.
Yeah,
it's always funny. So eventually, the magician's like, "Okay, I'm gonna pull the rabbit out of the hat because I'm a basic magician," yeah. And. He just pulls in into the hat. Bugs climbs under the sleeve, and again, just really aggressive Bugs. Just, the magician, the Bugs comes out of the magician's like collar. She's going, "You!" It's just Bugs going, "Yeah, me."
That's great. I like that.
And you'll never see me again. It's pissed off Bugs, and it's something it's such a different mood. It provides a lot of interesting dynamics in this.
Yeah.
And have you noticed here, Bugs does a kind of Porky Pig gag when he tries, when he like jumps off into the hat. He's like, and now I don't know.
Yeah, there was a bit of stammering.
It's like a stammering Porky gag there, which, okay.
Let's see now. You was trying to press the pull a rabbit out of the hat. Regarde.
I don't have a lot to say about this one because it's at least the beginning of this is just really basic. I mean, I will say I hadn't seen this cartoon in over 15 years, but the magician's magic word, which is "bruta, buta, zut." It's still embedded in my brain from like 2005 or whatever. So, you know.
Yeah, so we then get some, I do like just Bugs hanging out a sign that says, "Tempt me, try tempting me with a carrot."
I like that too.
Go ahead. This isn't a bit. Has the carrot, which is a reveal that he has a mallet at the ready, because of course he does. He just tries hitting Bugs. It doesn't work. Bugs and pulls him into the hat, which I can only presume to be an alternate dimension. As we spend a little bit too long, the magician gets pulled through the hat, and then Bugs just comes out of the hat, singing a song to himself. He rubs his belly at one point. I'm like, did he eat him? I'm like, what are we getting?
I just thought it was silly. Just him just male-vocalizing the...
But then we get my favorite joke in this, which is the swords bit. Where yes. Nurse just goes up and asks, like, "Hey, is there a little boy in the audience who'd like to come up and participate in this?" And also, Bugs' little boy voice, it sounds more like an old lady than a young child. I don't know, that's how you added it.
"I shall be happy to assist you, sir.
I shall now attempt to run razor-sharp swords through the basket. There's nothing for to fear."
But, yeah, it's just like, oh, don't worry, it's magic, don't worry. Go into here, Bugs gives the audience like a winking nod, like, yeah, okay, that's what I'm going to do with this. It's just, all right, and here comes the first sword.
And what's great is that it's focused on the fear that Alabama has, the sweat dripping, yeah. Hope he hasn't messed up the trick. And also, the pause between him slowly inserting the second sword and Bugs yelping out in pain
that
again.
That goes off! It's like, oh, that delay. I love that. Love
so
it.
So good.
And they're just panning over to reveal that Bugs has been standing over there the entire time.
Which, again, how did he get over there? Maybe Bugs is the real magician.
Like, are you enjoying the trick? Like, oh, well, jump to the hat again. But he can't. Because the magician has hammered the hat with nails and wood.
Yeah.
Which just slams into the hat.
I mean, we've talked about the backgrounds in this and how wild it is. But, like, I do like the color of the background changing as Alabama pounds the top hat with a hammer and then nails it shut. Yeah. Like, there's some cool things there.
As we then get this this red light, green light bit.
I like this gag a lot.
Where like, he's... where Alabama is coming out with a sword, and Bushy goes like, "Oh, red light stops, green light goes." Which, man, this magician would do great on a certain Korean Netflix program.
Oh, right, yeah, sorry,
Bridgerton. so eventually,
done.
Oh, thank you, thank you. So, Hey, you know what I mean? Like, Bugs wins, essentially. I do like Bugs fencing.
Yes.
He jumps up, goes to a fencing uniform as they fight it out, leading to, jumps into the hat again, I think, or something.
Yeah.
I think the magician gets injured, then Bugs just comes out of the hat with a ukulele, and then we're out. It's like, yep, I won! The magician is destroyed! Bye!
Yeah, I mean, he pies him as well. He just to get the last laugh.
He pies him as a callback to that.
Yeah. I mean, before we go into the actual final thoughts of the cartoon, did the last minute of this go just a bit too quickly for you?
A bit. Yeah. I felt like we could have gone like one or two more gags. Yeah.
It felt like Chuck was trying to be like Clampett and just like speed a million miles per hour and just, you know, and it didn't work as well.
I mean, in my opinion, this felt like an early attempt by the Jones division of the Bugs versus the Bully cartoon. That, I mean, I will say, of the Jones division, because this is early in his career, this, it feels like a Chuck Jones Bugs Bunny cartoon. There's definitely that style that's really starting to implement, especially in the story. But let's not kid ourselves here. I love this cartoon when it was called Long-Haired Hair and it would come out a couple years later. That's essentially a better refined version of what this short was.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if anything, it did establish Chuck's view of a Bugs cartoon, which is like, no, Bugs should mind his own business, and then a bad guy comes, and then the cartoon gets from there. It shouldn't begin with, like, Bugs trying to torment someone. That's something like it's fun. And I agree with that. But, yeah, it's a pretty good short, but I feel much better Bugs cartoons would kind of take this premise and do better with it than this one.
Yeah, definitely. It does seem like a blueprint kind of thing. I mean, look, this had a few good gags, some nice Bugs versus villain sensibility. And yes, as we discussed, the backgrounds are very wild and very fun. But this had a lot of dead air for me, a lot that doesn't add up compared to future Bugs cartoons, and as well as Bugs cartoons around this era. It's good. It's solid. You know, it does things right, but you know, it's not one of the more memorable efforts, not only by the early Chuck division, but also by, you know, most of the division at this point. It's fine. You know, could be better.
And yeah, this is an Anvil rating of 3 out of 5 Anvils.
That's exactly what I'm giving it. It's fine. We now go on to Rabbit Every Monday, which is which is the Yosemite Sam portion of the evening. Rabbit Every Monday came out on February 10th, 1951. Okay. So, what would be the absolute funniest thing to happen on the day of a Warner Brothers cartoons release, Mark?
The studio shuts down?
No. Funnier than that.
Disney releases their best animated movie the same day?
You're both close and very far away at the same time, because this does have to do with Disney. And I will say that it is born on this day. So who would be the absolute wildest, most unfitting person to be born on the same day as the release of a Warner Brothers cartoon, keeping Disney in mind?
Bill Farmer's birthday? Is it like a Disney voice actor's birthday?
Not a voice actor.
Oh, it's not Michael Eisner's birthday, is it?
Not Michael Eisner.
Bob Iger.
Yes, Bob Iger was born on February 10th, 1951. The same day Rabbit Every Monday was released.
Okay.
I find that hysterical. I find that so funny. Mr. Disney being born under the sign of a Warner Brothers cartoon.
Yeah.
Bob Iger, look.
I mean, Bob Iger is complicated, right?
Yes.
Again, we grew up in the 90s, early 2000s. We went through the transition between the last years of Michael Eisner into the beginning of Bob Iger. And he's done a lot of good things for our generation.
Yes.
Bought Pixar, kept them, everyone employed, including John Lasseter, but let's not go into that.
Yeah.
Renovated the Disney Parks experience.
Yeah.
I guess. I didn't go much, but I'm sure he did a good job with the parks.
Yeah.
But there's so many negatives. Like, a lot of negatives. As Muppet fans, the 90s, like, Michael Eisner, like, he worked with Jim Henson, they're gonna do this big Muppets thing. And then Jim Henson died, and they're like, well, can't do Muppet shit, sorry! And then Bob Iger comes in and goes, okay, it began good, like, okay, I will actually buy the Muppets. Great! What are you gonna do with them?
Nothing.
What? Yeah, nothing. Do a TV movie,
roll them out every 5 years to make sure people still know we have the rights.
Yeah. And, like, that's, like, the one... Listen, the previous CEO before Bob came back, Chapek, look, he sucked. At least they were doing more Muppet stuff, you know? A little bit more under Chapek, because that's the word on the street. It's like, oh, Bob Iger don't really like the Muppet, because it felt like a promise you had to keep up because of anyway, so there's that. Also was the CEO who began the Disney live action remakes.
Yeah, well.
And, yeah. Also was CEO when they shut down the 2D animation department.
Yeah.
And,
well, it's complicated. I mean, he's done a lot of good for the, industry, but at the same time, no CEO is good because so many shitty things need to be done in the name of money. So, you know.
Oh, and also he bought, like, some studios or some shit. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not sure.
But, yeah. Friz Freleng directed this one, Rabbit Every Monday. There's no writing credit, so it's assumed that Friz wrote it as well. Because that's at least what he's credited to in some books. It could be, you know, one of his usuals, but in lieu of that, people have assumed that it's Friz. This is the last short to feature Sam's mouth below his mustache, and his design changes essentially midway through the cartoon. Also, Rabbit Every Monday has the distinction of being the first Looney Tunes cartoon to appear on the first episode of The Bugs Bunny Show on October 11th, 1960. So that's pretty cool.
Oh! Shit! Okay!
Yeah.
You know, I would love to have been the meeting for that. You know, just... The all the directors, you know, it's Jones, Freleng, and McKimson just in a room together. Okay, so, like, what should be the first short? What's opera? Just Chuck. How about, what's opera, Doc? No! Oh my god, that would throw off so many children! Okay, fine, we'll cue. I got an idea. Hi, I'm Robert McKimson. How about we do,
something in a house.
Yes, some house cartoon.
No.
No. No. And how about... No. One dude back in the throne of... Oh, yeah. How about this? Rabbit Every Monday. It's a Sam... You have a Sam cartoon. People love you, Yosemite Sam.
I love this rock.
okay, very fine.
So that's how it happened.
But then, can it be followed by one of mine? No.
Wait, okay.
No.
How is he Squidward? And why isn't he Mr. Burns? I was expecting him to sound like Mr. Burns, like all your other voices. I kid.
Excellent. Squidward, we should definitely take over. Now what?
Sir. Sir, there's plenty of other better cartoons.
I know that. But why not this one?
Well, that's the one with, I don't know. Your setup has become tiresome. So, the beginning of this cartoon is, because it starts out with Bugs sort of roasting carrots over his hole in the middle of the forest. And he's singing a song called It's Magic, which was from a prior Warner Brothers production. Called Romance on the High Seas. Regular listeners of this podcast may not at all be surprised to hear that this was a Jack Carson Doris Day production. It's also a Busby Berkeley musical. It's not really remembered very much, but Its Magic is somewhat remembered. In the UK release of this movie, it was just called Its Magic. I don't know why they couldn't call it Romance on the High Seas in the UK. Maybe the Queen rejected it. But yeah, this is a good intro. I like the detail and the carrots that Bugs bases them with a lemon. Now, here, we have our foil. We see Yosemite Sam trudging through the forest with a double-barrel shotgun hunting Webb. Okay, here you see the issue.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah, Frizz many times has said that he got tired of using Elmer Fudd as a foil for Bugs, essentially replaced him with Yosemite Sam. Nowhere is it more evident here, where this is basically a role Elmer would play, complete with double-barrel shotgun and hunting for rabbits in the woods, just filled by Yosemite Sam. It's as if there was a recasting late in production, and they just couldn't change the sets. It's like, all right, just Sam, you play the role of Elmer. Oh, okay. I will say, because this is an early 50s cartoon, it still feels in many parts like it's coming off of, you know, a lot of the 40 sensibilities. And nowhere is that more evident than this gag here where Sam has a standoff with a guy going to leaving his seat in the movie theater, silhouette of a theater patron. And I do love this, where, you know, he's like, get back in your seat. And the guy, Mel is a great read of like, yes, sir. Yes, sir! And just, that's great. And also, I also love Sam saying to all of us, you know, the first one to get out of here and warn that rabbit gets his hide blown off. That goes for you too. And that's...
If you ask me, everyone in this giant theater is a total loser, including you.
Exactly. Thank you. Excellent.
I mean, that's like the last silhouette gag in Looney history, right? Like, it's gotta be.
No, but it's also very reminiscent of a lot of gags in the 40s where they would have someone in the audience go and tell the heroes that what was going on. And so basically it's Sam and Freeling basically saying, no, we're not doing that anymore.
Well, I think the best way to do that would just be like, land in the cartoon, Sam, Bugs is just like, shut up! shoots him.
That would be great. Which,
they did... I don't know what cartoon it was, but they did actually kill a silhouette guy in one of the shorts. I don't know which one exactly.
Definitely.
But just the very... It's like, shut up!
What?
Anyone else?
Full Terry Jones from Monty Python?
Yeah, essentially.
That's what he sounded like in the Spam skit. You just hear the loud bleeding of, shut up! Healthy Spam! Wonderful Spam! Shut up! Alright. But yeah, no, playing with the fourth wall in the convention of a Bugs cartoon as late as 1951 is a good choice. It's a good choice here. Well thrown in by Frizz or whoever. So Sam comes by Bugs' hole, and I do like the detail of Bugs peppering and roasting Sam's nose as he sort of looks over the fire. It feels almost contemporary, the detail on it. This does lead to a gag, because there's some stand-up stuff when Bugs gets out of his hole and, you know, is disagreeing with Sam. And this does lead to a gag where Sam fires the gun with bubble gum on the end of his barrel and winds up in a massive bubble, which has the always beloved trope of a character yelling and screaming what we can't hear any of it. And then, of course, it's, you know, the bubble does eventually go over the cliff. And I love that once that happens, A, Sam's horrified expression to us, and then the sound of him frantically blowing upward, which does somehow work for a bit. You know, Bugs' as attack. The length of this gag, with the gum springing Sam up and back, almost feels like a proto Wile E. Coyote gag.
A bit, yeah. But I love when Sam finally gets up, a sticky, and just gets a rock. It's like, I'll throw a rock in the hole. Throws a rock. Rock gets stuck to him. Rock hits Sam in the face.
I loved that. The simplicity of it worked for me. It's just, you know, you don't expect it to carry over to the next gag, but it really does. I liked the little saxophone part in the music when Sam was digging around Bugs' hole.
Hey, you, what's this? An earthquake?
I don't think there's that much to that gag after that, because I know that he eventually just sort of, like just takes out Bugs' hole, which is not very deep as opposed to some other cartoons, and just sort of, like puts it in a little, like sanding, like like filtering machine and get Bugs out of it.
Yeah, like when you're digging for gold. Yeah. You know, it's sort of that thing. Except it's just Bug gets revealed. It's like, well, Rabbit, walk. Which, okay, fine.
Yeah.
You gotta get out of here.
Yeah, sure. Because the rest
is cartoon takes place in a house.
Oh, no. Hold up. By Bob McKimson. No.
No. They do funny things in the house, though, so it makes it okay.
They do very funny things in the house, because the whole thing is that, you know, Sam has captured Bugs, is now going to cook him up in his house, and I like that Bugs has him put a nice specific type of firewood into the furnace, and I like that Bugs also throws Sam's hat in there. Sam goes and gets it and accidentally puts the log on his head, and I do like him slowly realizing, like, oh my, it's awful hot in here.
Sure, it's his favorite new hat. It's just, oh, it's a log! Damn it!
So, it leads to what is, ultimately, this central furnace gag, where you think it's one thing. So the whole thing is that Sam puts Bugs in the furnace. And then Bugs just begins to build this mythos of what's going on in the furnace, like coming back with ice and hearing just sounds coming from it and peeking out with lipstick traces all over him.
This build-up, I love this build-up.
Yes, me too.
The one that really got me was at the beginning, just like he's in the furnace, and he opens them and goes, hey, you got a bottle opener back?
I love that.
Thank you. That just had me giggling for some reason, I don't know why.
It's great.
But yeah, there's just a party in the oven.
Yes, but also, I like that, like, Bugs is building it up to Sam and just really, because you know in a sensible cartoon how this would go, you know, Bugs would do this and Sam would fall for it and Bugs would, you know, turn on the oven and cook Sam or whatever and, you know, he'd fall for his own thing. And, but with all the little details that Bugs builds is great. Like, again, the lipstick traces around him, I love him going, you know, the girls are asking for you, and Sam just sort of comes back with combed hair. Going, I'm ready and raring to go. And I thought it would just be that of just like, okay, he's in the oven. Da, 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 da. But no. Like, because Bugs informs us that he was just setting up a gag and was just fooling him. And then he realizes, you know what? I can't cook this guy. I feel bad for him. And so he opens the furnace to let Sam out. And random live action footage of a party going on in full color.
Yeah, they got that Warner Vault license money now. Yeah. They can do gags like this.
Maybe it's from yet another Jack Carson movie.
Yeah, probably. Like we would know. But yeah, it's just Bugs and some, like, he's shocked the first day. He's like, he goes in, opens the door and just goes, listen, I don't ask questions, I just have fun. Which, you know what? Hell yeah, man.
Yeah.
We should all live by those rules. Don't ask questions, just have fun.
Again, just the how bizarre that is, how absurdist. We don't even get an explanation, it just works. Like, oh yeah, there's a giant party going on in this furnace. And it's legitimately happening. So it's just a very bizarre ending that I absolutely love. I do like this one, just from the oddity of Sam playing the Elmer role in a Bugs and Elmer short. And I think it has enough late 40s energy to keep it fresh, even if it does feel basic in the early 50s. I think there were a couple of lulls, but the gag work and structure was really solid, especially the structure sort of siphoning outwards into the furnace last couple minutes or so. Sam also surprisingly fit really well into this role. I think it works more often than it's odd. It's an odd novelty seeing Sam as the Elmer Fudd role. But
yeah,
I think it worked.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Great Yosemite Sam gags in here. I love the ending bit with the party. It just ends silly enough for me for it to really work. Yeah. I really enjoyed this short.
I am actually, I had it lower when I was watching it, but talking about it, I'm actually going to give it a 4 out of 5.
I'm also giving this a 4 out of 5.
Hell yeah.
All right.
Hmm.
So the last show we're covering here is at Hair Remover. Last. It came out on...
At long last.
Yes, Hair Remover, which came out on... Oh no, what happened again? No. This is the unruly hair. It came out on February 10th, 1945. Guards, what happened on that day? A war was going on. best way to put it. That's just, you know, World War II shenanigans.
Yeah. I have the SS General von Steuben is sunk by the Soviet submarine S-13. Which is weird because von Steuben was a German general that actually aided, I believe he aided the no, that can't be right. Yeah, I think he was on the Redcoat side during the Revolutionary War. I know that because on an episode of Liberty's Kids, Arnold Schwarzenegger played him.
Corporal, I ordered your company to assemble.
That'd be me.
Where are the other 99 men?
It appears he's all that's left, sir.
Appears? Where are your records?
I am not a secretary.
Not a secretary? Do you have fingers to count on? Do you have toes? Do you have the Corporal, yell at him for me. I need more English words.
Yes, hello, I am General von Steuben. I come here to America for some... There's no California, what are we doing?
I am so sorry. There's an episode... Okay, for those who remember, Liberty Kids was a PBS animated series...
That got surprisingly amazing guest stars.
It got the biggest fun guest stars in the world, essentially. And it was like three kids. Did they time travel? Or was it like a quantum leap situation where like they jumped into different eras of American history?
I think they were just... I don't know. I think they were living in that time period anyway.
But yeah. I remember... Oh, God. I saw at a contest clip of it one time, but I remember Liberty Kids because when I was a child, the Chick-fil-A toy of the month or whatever were Liberty Kid cassette tapes. You would put the cassette tape in, and it was essentially an audio podcast of a Liberty Kids episode, really. Kind of. I mean, hell, the voice actors, and I don't know if they got any guest stars for the audiobook.
It
would be hilarious if that's the one that got Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
I could do weekend on cassette player. No. Did it eat the tape? No, it's just Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I mean, looking at some of the guest stars they got for this show, you have people like Sylvester Stallone, Ben Stiller, Ray Fiennes, Whoopi Goldberg, who...
Of course.
And I love Porky. General Norman Schwarzkopf, Liam Neeson, Michael Douglas, Arnold, Warren Buffett, the late Aaron Carter, Michael York, Maria Shriver, Dustin Hoffman, Oakland A's pitcher Barry Zito, Billy Crystal as John Adams, and Walter Cronkite as Benjamin Franklin.
Billy Crystal as John Adams. I just want to see... Okay, you know the Paul Giamatti, John Adams show on HBO?
Yeah.
I just want that, except it's Billy Crystal looping over Paul Giamatti as John Adams. Hey, now listen.
No, Mr. Adams, sit down and stop doing that Fernando Lamas impression. And General Washington, you look marvelous. John!
Done. Okay, so the basic plot of the show. We'll move on to this. The basic plot of the show. Oh, damn it. I forgot the late Aaron Carter did the theme song.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, makes sense. Early 2000s. So Benjamin Franklin and four fictional associates of his and their experiences during the American Revolution. Although the series spans from the Boston Tea Party to the ratification of the U.S. Constitution in 1789, no main characters appear to age much, except for Dr. Franklin.
Yes, he ages 90 years over the span of the entire series.
Essentially, yeah. Oh my goodness.
That's the weirdos. The Unruly Hair is a Frank Tashlin cartoon written by Melvin Miller. This is one of only two Bugs cartoons directed by Tashlin at Warner, the other being Hair Remover. But who would get those confused?
No, who would? This is also Tashlin's only credited appearance on a Bugs Bunny cartoon because Warner was like, fuck this guy when Hair Remover happened.
Like, yeah, no, pretty much.
No one directed this cartoon. It was directed by a ghost.
It was directed by Alan Smithy.
Yes. No, but this is like a big final short for a lot of things at this time. Apparently, this was the last short to use the 1941 to 45 rendition of Merrily We Roll Along. It would be Retired and Life with Feathers, which is the short we covered. Okay. This is the final one not to have expanded credits, simply only credit supervisor, musical direction, story, and voice characterizations. So that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least. Oh, it's, considering how the union's going right now, maybe that was a union decision. They're like, hey, fucking credit the people. You don't want them to leave, do you?
No.
Though I would love. You know, because everyone's like, oh man, I know Heroes went downhill after the writer's strike. Holy shit. I would love to know what Lucha cartoons would have happened if, like, yeah, the writers left for 3 months and they came back and then all of a sudden all the shorts turned to shit. They just sit there, and it's just Bugs and Elmer sitting in a room for 5 minutes. Nothing funny happens. It was a dark time. Daffy Duck spun his wedding ring for 7 minutes. It was the funniest thing in the world.
Yes. Anyway.
Last one to have the Bugs Bunny mugshot. I think there's a different term for that. it's just, you know, Bugs' face just like, hey, it's a Bugs Bunny cartoon. There's a better way to say that.
It's not like he was arrested for using.
Wanted. Bugs Bunny. Crimes. Just a rolling credit to like every. And this is the 40s, Doc. Anyways. And this is apparently the last cartoon where Frank Tashner receives on-screen credit because he got fired. You know it. And, fun plug for recent contemporary Looney Home Media releases. Now, I don't know what you know. The print I saw wasn't terrible. Like, it was a pretty alright print what I saw. But apparently, and you said that this comes out in June, so it should be out by now. But this short, properly restored remastered, is a part of the Looney Tunes Collector's Choice Blu-ray set, which is the most recent outing from the crew who brought us the Golden Collections. So, you want to support Looney Home Media, which, by this point, why wouldn't you? Yeah. Go around and buy that. It's a lot of fun from what I've heard. I've totally owned this set, and I've seen the shorts by now. It's got Beanstalk Bunny on it. Of course I fucking bought it. It provides me with closure, damn it.
Closure, that's important to all of us. All fans. All people that like owning things.
So, the title card of this short, it's the only hair, and it shows us a train. Keep that in mind. It begins with a crew in silhouette, sung very white. I don't believe there's supposed to be any rut-rows. But, they're building a train station. Yeah. They're singing, I've been working on the railroad. They're just building a train.
Yeah.
As we pan over to Bugs reading a book.
Yeah.
Hair-raising stories. He's just enjoying himself. And apparently, where he is part of the railroad track. So.
Yeah.
We get get Elmer Fudd who comes in.
Can I just say the detail and shadow behind the rail workers in the beginning is fantastic. It's a very it's unbecoming of what the cartoon is going to end up being, but it's very much like, you know, okay, this is the story of the foundation of the rail system through these woods. It's really not about, you know, okay, a train is coming. It's more about like, okay, some people had to build a railroad and some people had to keep industry going, even if it was going through forests and going through all of this. And so it's basically saying that, you know, Elmer being, you know, one of the many people who are, in fact, working on the whale woad, as he sings, You know, the plan is to, you know, ruin some of the forests in order to make sure that the 1020 to Chicago passes through okay. And at least that's how I read it. I read it as, you know, the villain being deforestation and, you know, running right through the wilderness rather than just around it. Now, that could be very wrong, but that's why I think that it's significant.
Yeah, so we begin the chase, essentially, where, you know, Bug shoots down. I think he's in, like, a tree trunk in this. Oh, wait, no. It's a hole. As, he lifts up a sign that says PU to demonstrate that Elmer sucks.
Yeah. I also like during this, first of all, the initial reveal of Elmer singing I've been working on the whale woad is funny enough. But Bugs goes, hey, that sounds like Frankie Sinatra or an unreasonable facsimile. What, like Richard Bickenbach? I mean, he might be working on this very cartoon.
Yeah. And something I noticed immediately in this, because there's not many Tashlin done Bugs Bunny cartoons, is the tone of this is a Frank Tashlin cartoon, that being very high energy and very let's just go mentality with it. And that's what Bugs is this. He's just ready at the jump. No provoking or anything. Just like, I'm going to mess with Elmer Fudd today. Which, yeah, that's usually how Elmer Fudd cartoons usually go. As, oh my god, yeah. There's so much that happens in a short amount of time. I mean, one joke that I come up with is the dynamic ways that Bugs goes into his rabbit hole in this. Yeah. It's not just jumps in the hole, it makes this big show out of it.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool. I like that.
And just the speed of it, too, is fantastic.
There's one where, I don't know how exactly this happens, but out of Bugs's hole comes a fire truck.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a fireman.
The full ladder and everything. Because, what was it? It was Bugs holds a match to Elmer's telescope. Elmer looks and he sees that the forest is on fire. Complete with a music cue.
Help! Water! Firemen! Firemen! Conflagration! Help! Water! Firemen! Help! Water! Help!
And so Bugs just literally gets a whole fire hose and a ladder out of the hole, and that's very fun. By the way, you skipped over the little bit where Bugs throws a centerfold in front of Elmer's telescope, and just see his limbs flying back in reaction.
And Bugs is like, "Hey, you want this? Don't again?" Oh my goodness. Oh, man. So, like, what are gadgets like here?
Also, the exploding cigars gag. I don't know why I laughed at it, but I laughed at it very hard. Just the timing of the many explosions on top of each other. I think that it was, as midway through, I think Bugs pulls the gag of fooling Elmer and saying, there's a rabbit in there. I hope you find him. And I think that was where Elmer just had the very good delivery of...
There's something screwy around here.
Could be you, Doc.
Yeah, also, I do love when Bugs is with the fire hose, he puts it in Elmer's mouth, and I wrote down, because he kind of inflates due to the water, so I wrote down here, oh hey, it's Fat Elmer!
Yeah.
Fat Elmer appears for like a half second.
Take that, Clampett.
Yeah, and not to quote The Simpsons again, but we're halfway through this cartoon. When are they going to get to the train?
When was there a sign above this cartoon, Mark, that says a train appears in this cartoon?
You know, yes, there was.
They're building a railroad. That doesn't mean the train's going to come past immediately because they're still building the fucking railroad.
But the title card. Anyways.
But the title card... Yeah, I mean, it's not like the title card means, oh, this is going to appear in this episode. It's like, you know, they have... The title card people don't always work with the people that are actually, you know, making the episode.
That is one process of the short making that we don't get a lot of. You know, I don't remember Behind the Tunes on Grown Collection Volume 6 of, like, okay, title cards, which given... title cards are very important in the restoration of these cartoons. That's a very big, like, oh, because the Blue Ribbon, they cut off the title card credits. It's very important that we reinstate them back.
Yeah.
Who did them? Who was in charge of them? Why are they important? Besides having the credits.
So we have the baton firecracker gag, which I really like. Just because it bugs his exuberance, because, you know, he's like, come on, Elmer, attaboy, Elmer. Just like expressly saying his name.
Again, we don't get that a lot in these cartoons, but it's, whenever he does, it's hilarious. There's some great delivery of Bugs here. There's one moment where Bugs just goes like,
"It's murder," he says. How gruesome.
Which I loved, and there's also a fantastic...
Oh, you and your old gun, you're crazy.
Yeah, it's great. And also... the eventual explosion at that goes off at the end of this continues the rail work in time with the music and continues to complete the railroad, maybe not in the way of Bugs's home. So there may not be a train coming, but that's at least followed up to.
It is. And also before that, there's the rat. The big rat conversation that I loved, where, you know, it's like, oh well, you know, only a rat would shoot someone in the back.
Only a rat would shoot a guy in the back. I reiterate, only a big fat rat would shoot a guy in the back. So I'm a big fat rat. Ah, have some cheese, rat.
Have some cheese.
That's very early Bugs, and I like that.
It is. There's also, like, he plays baseball with Elmer at one point with the firecracker, which I it's just he's so chaotic in this.
Yeah, it's fantastic. But yeah, no, it finishes the railroad with the explosion, and I think that's Elmer's comeuppance. I think he's out of it, and Bugs, I think, catches the eventual train that comes across it, or no. So
Bugs, he hops on the train. The train doesn't hit Elmer, by the way. Bugs just escapes, essentially.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, okay, bye. And he's like, wait a minute, jumps off. Animation of Bugs throwing himself across the railroad, going. Now they didn't say no essential traveling. I just got to Bugs with a hapsack because the war.
Yeah, no, it's a war message ending. It's fine. Yeah, no, I do see why that would infuriate you if you were expecting this to be a train cartoon. I wasn't expecting this to be a train cartoon. I thought it was a fine ending of just a subversion. I do think that, you know, it didn't need the war tag if it had just been another year later. But like, no, I mean it worked of just like the progression of the falling railroad spikes and all of that, I think, was really good and kept the theme going.
Yeah, it's great. It's a weird Bugs cartoon. I mean, it has the look of like a contemporary Bugs, but the personality of Speed or Frankly and Avery in some ways. Great gag work, just fantastic energy throughout. It's just very funny to see like a Tashin-centric cartoon is just, yep, Bugs is completely unhinged, which is fun. You know, it's always nice to see the calm, collected, calculated Bugs moves. But also, it's just Bugs is just gonna go fucking crazy for 7 minutes, and does a damn good job with it. Even if there wasn't a train,
you and that train. Of all people to be obsessed with a train, it's you rather than me.
I know. How does that make any damn sense?
No sense. But yeah, as I probably thought when I covered this a couple of years ago, this is a very basic Bugs and Elmer cartoon with all right gag work, great animation and speed. I do think that the Tashlin Cell's ability is boosted somewhat, but again, compared to a lot of the Bugs cartoons of this era, it doesn't stand out as much as I would like. There are some good gags. There are some good moments. There are also some that sort of fall flat for me. The ending could have been bigger than it was. I also like the railroad sort of theme of this, although it could have gone a little bit bigger and led to something else. Maybe not exactly a train, but something else. I do like this one. I think it's not perfect, but I like it.
I'm giving this short 3.5 out of 5 animals.
That is exactly what I'm giving it. It's pretty good, not perfect.
All right, let's see what you guys had to say about these continuing Bugs Bunny-themed shorts.
All right, so we start here with T. Lamone, the pop culture fan at T. Lamone 2000. Has some fond memories of all of these. He says, Case the Missing Air, I remember, because it somehow is a public domain tune that was used in stuff like this. And he provides a photo of the Cartoon Craze Presents Bugs Bunny DVD. Yeah, no, I mean, again, I like the public domain ones because A, you can get them on YouTube, and B, you have all these different kind of issues that made sure they got out to the masses because people didn't have to pay royalties. So, yeah, those are always cool. He says, I've seen Rabbit every Monday, and I do remember it had a different version in Bugs Bunny's Thanksgiving Diet when the Western party in the oven scene was replaced with a disco party in the oven. Yeah, I think we get into that a little bit. Very much a sign of the times.
Yes, I very much would love to see where, you know, just hear you send me Sam going, woohoo! Give me some of that white mold powder, lady!
Oh, God, Yosemite Sam in Studio 54. I don't want to think about that. No. 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 You just hear, just from the restrooms, you just hear, ooh. And he doesn't have that many memories about Unruly Hair, but he says he's going to be checking out because he has the Blu-ray set that just came out, the Collector's Choice. So,
yes.
Yeah. Please. That's another great reason to use the Collector's Choice, because Unruly Hair is a fun one, and I'm glad we finally got to it.
So we have a comment here from Aunt Bugs at AntBugs84. Who says, I rewatched Case of the Missing Hair recently, and it's really growing on me. I believe This is the first Jones cartoon where he starts finding his stride and works very well with Bugs Bunny. Love the expressions, and the rapid smears always crack me up. Yeah, it's very much a lean to his cartoon where Jones is really taking... again, he's departing from the trying to be Disney style, and very much going into, okay, well, if I can't be Disney, let's just do things that you would never do. Let's do more smear frames. Let's do crazy backgrounds. Yeah. Let's do dynamic characters that have a lot of personality and wit to them.
Yeah,
and it's very much demonstrated in this cartoon. There's great moments of Bugs in Case of Missing Hair. That's just...
Yeah.
You can see where Jones would take the character throughout the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, no, a lot of people that responded to us really had a lot of rave reviews about Case of the Missing Hair. And they should, because we really liked it too. Because our other comment here from our usual commenter, Spiderus Prime 2, says Case of the Missing Hair is funny and good short. The first of Bugs getting revenge on a bully that can be a magician. Weird that a rabbit can live in a tree, but at least he's not later drinking some tea. Yes, I did watch Alice in Wonderland before this. At least I didn't watch Three Caballeros like we did a little bit ago. I'm glad that both by us or in general that you guys are going back to Case of the Missing Hair, because it's an underrated one. It's one that I often forget exists, but it's a really good one.
Yeah, so thank you guys so much for your comments this week.
Yeah. Before we get to what we're doing next week, we just want to take this opportunity to thank the people that have subscribed to our Patreon. People such as Tri-Screw, Andrew, James Irish, Sam Adams, the guy, not the drink. They have helped us out by pledging anywhere from $1 to $5 on our Patreon. And they get perks like being thanked in the middle of an episode, in addition to their commentaries that they get that we record, as well as early access to episodes and handwritten letters from me, and also playbacks of live streams. So if you want to become a patron just like those four that I thanked in the middle of this episode, you can follow our patron at patreon.com/TNQAF.
All right. So for next week's episode, you'll never get this. It's more Bugs Bunny cartoons. What are the shorts we're covering next week, Jordan?
All right, the next ones. Oh boy, these next three are ones that we've been meaning to cover for a while. All righty. And the thing is that at least two out of three of them, I believe, are Robert McKimson shorts. So that'll be interesting. Okay, so the next three Bugs cartoons we will be doing this June Bugs are Rabbit Transit, which is the only Cecil the Turtle Bugs Bunny square off we haven't covered yet. Rabbit's Kin, which is the first appearance of Pete Puma. We've done contemporary Pete Puma cartoons, but not the original. And Hair Conditioned, which is a pretty standard 40s Bugs versus Bully cartoon that I think would be fun to cover. So those three.
Two of those are definitely ones where it's like, how have we not covered them already?
Definitely. No,
we covered so much, especially Cecil. We covered Cecil at like episode like 10 through 20. Like, we went through the Cecil shorts, the director series, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So it's like, okay, we'll finally get around to covering the one short in as a kid I went because it's a different, I think that's a Freeland cartoon, if I'm not mistaken. Like it's a different director. Then of course the first or second cartoon. I think even as a kid, I was like, "Oh, this is different." And I don't remember if I dislike it or anything, but that's something to look forward to.
Yeah, no, definitely. We have a lot of things to say about those.
All right, so that's the end of this week's episode. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow me at MarkHalem1995.
And you can also follow me at TallGuySchmidt.
If you like to keep up with the podcast or give your thoughts for next week's episode, you can follow us at that_Looney on both Twitter and Instagram, or type in the podcast title, we're the first result.
And you can also find our podcast where podcasts are readily available. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Player FM, Anchor, Stitcher, and Amazon Music. We have a YouTube channel where we put out videos, clips based off of things that come from these very episodes, set to visuals that Mark edits. Some of those come out every couple of weeks. There should be some more fun ones coming up very soon.
Yes, indeed. So, until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan. And to quote General von Steuben, excellent. Good night, everybody.